That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. I am That Money Guy. It makes complete sense. And we are here with you for the next hour, by we, I mean me, to essentially make you better with your money. It's a very simple objective. I have an hour to complete said objective. Hopefully I will get there along the way, but I am 99.99% sure that in the next hour of content that you guys are going to hear, learning about money, hearing things about, you know, the economy and so on, that you will be a little bit better with your money, even if you just drop in and drop out during the show. But I mean, if you stick around for the whole thing, that's probably ideal. So, what is coming up today? Well, we've got actually a really fun show. We always kick off with the economy. There's been a lot going on with the economy this week. I'm not sure if any of you are aware what happened last Thursday / Friday. We've got a new government, Labour. They are into power. So we will be talking about the effects of that and anything else going on in the economy that actually affect your back pocket. And then if you hang around for a bit longer, I'm joined by two incredible content creators within the finance world. We've got Beth Fuller and Laura Ann Moore. So you might not have heard of their names. You might have heard of their names. You probably should have heard of their names. If you haven't, please go and check them out on socials. These are two incredible people that talk about money all the time and are doing probably a much better job than I am. So yeah, definitely go and check them out. We also like to do a bit of a Q&A. I'll give you some tips. You know how it is. We keep it very casual here, but ultimately I promise you will be better with your money come the end of the hour. So like I said, we kick things off with the economy. A few stories going on. I did say that we were going to tuck into the whole new government, you know, Mr. Keir Starmer. I actually got to meet him the other week, which was pretty cool. This was before he was PM. He's now PM. Does that kind of count that I've met the PM? I'm not so sure. If he wasn't the PM when I met him, does it count like I've met the PM? That will not get you better with your money, but maybe we can do some kind of massive poll. Have I met the PM or not? Because I think I have. I think it counts. Anyway, enough about that. The first story that I really want to dive into today is about student debts. Now, I have a student debt. I actually wrote down in front of me what my current student debt is. This isn't going to be pretty for anyone to hear, in particular me, my wife, my family, or anyone related to me. I currently owe on my student loan £44,430.06 as of July the 7th. What's the date today? The 8th. So as of yesterday, that was how much money I owed with interest accrued. Now, I went to university for 4 years. I paid £9,250 a year. I'm not going to do the maths, but it doesn't equal £44,430. I've also been paying it off for the past 4 years. So yes, that is a lot of money. But what is going on in the news when it comes to student debts? Well, we have a lot of transparency as to the data of what generally people are owing these days. So let's find out how I compare to the average person. So like I said, I currently owe just around £44,500. I actually might have thrown up in my mouth a little bit for having gone to university. As you can tell, my mechanical engineering degree is really paying off. That was a joke, in case you didn't realise. But yeah, let's take a quick look. So around 1.8 or just almost 1.8 million people are now in at least £50,000 worth of UK student debt. This was data obtained by BBC News. Let's keep going up. More than 61,000 people owe more than £100,000 in student debt, and another 50 people owe above, now wait for it, this one is probably going to blow your mind a little bit, owe more than £200,000 of student debt. I mean, did they like go to university for like 15 years straight? How on earth do you owe over 200 grand? I would really love to dive into that number. Don't have that information right in front of me, but that's just a general consensus. It also said that as of 2023-2024, around 2.8 million people were making student loan repayments. So 2.8 million people were making repayments. At least 1.8 million of them owed more than £50,000. And do we have the average? We do have the average. So it was The average balance for loan holders when they start making repayments was less than £45,000 previously. It is now £48,470. The average balance of loan holders when they start making repayments. Oh, so it looks like I'm making repayments early. That's pretty scary numbers. Thank you to BBC News for obtaining all of that and making me absolutely horrified. But, I mean, at least I'm not in the 1.8 million people that owe more than £50,000. I'm not quite that far away, only about £5,500 away. Give that a week and the interest will have accrued that much. But I thought this was a great moment for people out there that hear the term student loan and completely shut down. Whilst I've got you on this show, let me actually explain to you how it works, because I think this is a huge piece of knowledge that most people choose to ignore. They either go to a university fully blindly, being like, it's a student loan, I'll deal with it once, you know, I'm earning money. Or they do the opposite and they go, student loan, don't want to borrow money, not going to go to university. So why don't I actually give you the information as to how student loans work, so that you can make an informed decision slash you can actually know what's going to happen once you finish that degree. Or maybe you're someone who has finished a degree, has student debt and has no idea what's going on. So here's the deal. Majority of people listening that do owe money are probably on plan 2 or plan 5. There's two different plans. They work in different ways. Plan 2 is for anyone that really went to university in England between 2012 and 2023. And if you started in 2023 and beyond, you're probably on plan 5. Now I'm going to put like a side-by-side comparison. So here's how they work. You only start repaying them once you earn, for plan 2, above £27,295, above for plan 5, above £25,000. Hey, remember, plan 5 is 2023 and beyond. Plan 2 is what the majority of people who still owe money probably are on. How much do you pay above those thresholds? Well, on plan 2, you pay 9% of your income. And on plan 5, you pay 9% of your income. That is above. So let's say you earn £1,000 more than that threshold. You'll be paying 9% of that, £90. Yeah, that was really quick math. Thank you. You'll be paying £90 worth of student loan tax, debt, whatever you want to call it. Interest, how does it accrue? On plan 2, the older plan, you pay RPI plus 3%. On plan 5, you pay just RPI. And everyone's going to be like, oh, how come people on plan 5 pay less than us? Well, this is why. The length of the student loan gets wiped out if you're on plan 2 after 30 years, if you're on plan 5 after 40 years. So after 40 years, if you haven't finished paying it off, voila, goodbye, your entire student debt has disappeared. Current interest that is accruing on both of those currently stands at 7.9% annually. There you go. That's a little bit of a breakdown as to how student loans work. Pretty crazy, but at least there's this whole argument as to whether it's a debt or whether it's a tax. The reason why people think it's more of a tax than a debt is because you only have to pay a certain percentage once you're earning over a certain amount, a bit like how a tax works. People say it's a debt because, I mean, you borrow it and have to pay it back. I'll let you guys decide. I actually view it a bit more of as a tax. Remember, if you're earning below £25,000 for any plan, you're not paying back a penny of student loan. And let's say you keep earning under £25,000 for the next 30, 40 years, you will never pay a penny in your student loan. It will get fully wiped. Just an FYI. So that's interesting. I did also notice this. So currently, if you go to university, it costs £9,250 a year in the UK. Go back to 2012, that was £9,000 a year. Go back to 2011, that was £3,375 a year. Go back to 2006, it was £3,000 a year. Go back to 2005, well, from 1998 till 2005, it was £1,000 a year. Yeah, take me back to 1998, please. £1,000 a year to go to uni. I think everyone would have done it then. I think basically all it's doing is making you make a more informed decision as to whether a degree is worth it, because they are bloody expensive. So yeah, I would think twice about it these days, and I would actually kind of consider, am I doing a degree or do I want to go to university for the experience? That is a valid reason to go, by the way. Or am I going for a specific degree? Or is maybe something like an apprenticeship or getting a job straight away worth it for me? Labour, they are our government. Sir Keir Starmer has taken the hot seat of the PM, and that was officially confirmed. Well, I feel like it's been officially confirmed like for months, but theoretically officially confirmed as of Friday. What does that actually mean for your money? Well, Mrs. Reeves, the Chancellor, she was the Shadow Chancellor, she's had the Chancellor, laid out a few things over the past 24 hours as to what is coming, in particular stressing when it comes to kind of your money or how it's going to affect you. The building of 1.5 million new homes within the UK, that's 300,000 a year. That is an incredibly high target that hasn't been achieved by any of the most recent governments in any year, I'm fairly certain to say. So good luck to Mrs. Reeves and to the Labour Party on that one. But apparently they've got a plan for it. I mean, she's announcing today the idea of, you know, rewriting the whole Green Belt and the Grey Belt and writing to all of the councils to actually figure out a new way of doing planning permission. So maybe this will work. What will adding all of these homes to the economy actually help? How will this help? Well, I don't know if anyone's realised, but in the UK, property, and especially in London, property is crazy expensive. And I think the number one reason that most experts say as to why it's super expensive is lack of supply. Lack of supply of affordable homes is basically the reason why property prices just surge and surge and surge and surge. So I believe that is what the Labour government are trying to fix. What else will Labour be bringing in, according to their manifesto, aside from lots and lots of houses? Well, they promised a note. Well, I love that this is what I'm saying they're bringing in when this is kind of like they've said they're not doing something. But I suppose it kind of still counts. Well, they're not increasing VAT. They're not going to be increasing income tax. They're not going to be increasing national insurance tax. They have no plans to increase capital gains tax. And they will be capping corporation tax at 25%. Again, basically like not an increase. So yeah, lots of non-changes in tax, which also, if you've ever heard of stealth taxes, which is basically they don't change the tax thresholds, but because of inflation, we all start to earn more, so we all start to pay more tax. Maybe something that's worth looking into, but I suppose it's better than them raising taxes, so we'll give them not two thumbs up, we'll give them one thumbs up for not doing something. Other things that will be coming to a nation near you. GB Energy, heard that coming around. Apparently, we're getting this new company, GB Energy. Clean, renewable energy. We're going to be becoming an absolute powerhouse when it comes to that industry. Again, we shall see, but theoretically, it's meant to make our energy bills cheaper. Yeah, it's one of those. We'll see what happens when it comes. What else will they be coming in? Well, if you go to private schools, you're going to be paying VAT. I'm really sorry to anyone that went to private schools. I went to private schools, so thank God I got out before that happened. When I say they're bringing VAT to private schools, VAT, there was like a rule that, well, I suppose the Tories put in, where they basically just paused VAT on private schools. And Labour are like, we're going to unpause that. Not sure why private schools and people that pay fees on private schools are not paying VAT. So that's back. Other things that you should be aware of, minimum wage. It's coming to all adults. So there's not going to be a rate if you're 18 to 21 and then 21 above. It's just going to be generally a minimum wage for anyone above the age of 18. Great for 18-year-olds. This is a whole discussion actually in last week's episode. So if you haven't heard that or that is interesting to you about what's going on with this minimum wage, is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? I would recommend you going and having a listen back to that. And then a few other things that I'm going to fly through before we dive into the next segment. Triple lock is here to stay. If any of you know how pensions work, triple lock means that our pensions every single year rise with the highest of, let me get this right, inflation, 2 or 2.5% or average salaries? I got definitely 2 out of 3 right. This is my field, so that's quite embarrassing that I couldn't lock that in. Do you see what I did there? Triple lock that in. Yeah. I'm not a comedian. I'm just a finance guy. And the last thing that's probably worth bringing up is the mortgage guarantee scheme. So what this is that Labour are making it easier for people to get onto the property ladder with just a 5% down deposit. This has actually been in effect for quite a few years now. It doesn't actually work too well. Not many people use just 5% down because you still need to be able to afford the other 95% according to your salary, just as an FYI. So I'm actually going to give that one like a thumbs down. It's not really doing anything. It sounds good on paper. It sounds like they're doing a lot, but it doesn't actually affect so many people. Anyway, that's that for what's going on in the economy. I'm sure there's going to be lots and lots more coming up in future shows where we tell you more and more about how Labour are actually doing and what they're actually applying. One other thing that I'm just going to mention is we all thought there might be like a little budget, which is basically like the biggest news for people that work in the personal finance world. And the report on it, it looks like that's not going to be until October when it was due anyway. So again, if you are someone that is really excited for, were Labour going to bring out a new budget and change everything and make some bunch of radical reforms, not until the time it was expected. There you go. How was that for a bit of a lowdown on what Labour are bringing in? Brought you up to speed and made it relevant to you. Hopefully. Maybe-ish. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this. And coming up after this short break, I have Beth Fuller in the studio, who is a personal finance content creator.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
FUBAR Radio presents...
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Joining me now, I have Claire Seal, who is a content creator and author.
You know, I think there's loads of shame when it comes to money and financial difficulty, but I honestly think that that shame is really a symptom of the judgment that exists in society. I don't think that people are feeling ashamed for the sake of it. I think they're feeling ashamed because you can't really sort of open your phone or open a newspaper without... seeing these huge judgments piled on people who've made mistakes with money. And I think it's acceptable for people to slag you off about being bad with money in a way that it might not be for like other mistakes that you might make.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Malani.
Let's bring in Tobias Elwood, former defence minister.
Rishi Sunak has done well to pivot us back, taken us into far calmer political waters.
Has he taken you back into calmer political waters? I mean, you're on track, according to some of the polls, to the largest wipeout in years and, you know, may never return from it. I mean, how has he taken you back into calmer political waters?
We've just seen inflation go down to 2%. Confidence in business is returning.
But is that down to Rishi Sunak?
You've got to let me finish the question. You keep asking me a question and then throwing another question in.
I'm just curious to know, is inflation down to Rishi Sunak?
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
I have this stunning Steph Williams with me now, founder of the WeGlow app. I did turf games on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And it was horrible. It was horrible. But it was so fun. But it was like savage, right? Yeah. But I wasn't the best in the room and I hate that. And I was like, oh, God, I haven't trained like well enough for this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I don't normally think I am. But then when I was there, I was like, this is so annoying because... Yeah. And then I was like... Why do I actually need to be good at this, though? Yeah. Like, can I not just do it for fun?
But also, it's like, when I've done, like, casts and stuff before, and the blokes were like, lift that heavier weight, and I'm like, no, like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't need to lift the heavier weight. Like, I know what I'm capable of. I know what works for my body.
Yeah.
And I think it's just kind of, like, I know what makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if you're working out to feel good, you're going to look good.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show. For those of you that are joining in, I am Gabriel, That Money Guy. Mm-hmm. This is That Money Show on FUBAR Radio. And sat opposite me is Beth Fuller. She is in the studio.
Hello.
How are you doing? Welcome to the show. How's
Thank
it going?
Thank you for having me. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. So for those of you that don't know, Beth is a content creator that likes talking about money. Those are two of my favorite like tick boxes. It's nice and open with everything money, something that I think more people should be, but obviously it's quite a difficult thing.
Yeah, it's a tricky topic,
to
isn't it?
So should we like go straight in with like why and how do you do it?
So for me, I was in like credit card debt a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. I had like around £8,000 credit card debt. But then I felt like my life just looked like everyone else's life on social media. So I couldn't understand when I had to figure out how to pay off the credit card debt and really like actually live within what my disposable income could let me live within. I was like, how come everyone else seems to have such a better life than me? Like, there must be something off between what people are portraying online to what people actually can afford.
The classic social media conundrum.
Like, it must be the case. So I was just like, you know what? I'm sure I'm not the only person who has been in credit card debt, has experienced paying off, but also has had to, like, strip back their lifestyle quite a bit. So let me just... talk about it, I guess. And then...
So you are like the opposite of social media, where most people on social media hide the bad stuff.
Yes.
They're like very like, look at this cool car I got. Look at this is where I'm going to eat my restaurant on the weekend. Look at these new clothes I bought. You were like, look at this debt I have.
Yeah, literally. I was just like, right, okay. I can save this much per month. He is like what I've got for my disposable income. Here's what our childcare bill looks like. Like I was just like, here it is. Like there you go.
And you were just like, no one else is doing it, so you wanted to do it. You just felt like it was necessary for the internet.
Yeah, I thought like I had learned so much about personal finance in that time. And I didn't know about so much stuff. Like I had like obviously looked up like budgeting from like the basics because I didn't budget before. And then there were so many things that I was just like, this doesn't suit me because I heard of like the 50-30-20 rule. But I was like, my outgoings were higher than 50% of my income, which again must be quite a lot of people. Like yeah. If you have childcare bill and stuff like that. So I was just like, right, I can't be the only person who has had to figure it out themselves. So. Here's what I've figured out, basically.
And how was the response from people with you being so open about your finances?
Mad. I mean, TikTok's insane. Like
yeah,
the kind
can
of,
confirm.
Yeah, the reach that you can get and the growth that you can see. I used to want to create content ages ago. Like, I've always been that type of person. It was just like, it looks so interesting and creative and fun, but what would I say? And all of that, like, you just don't know what to do. And then I was like, okay, I feel really passionate about this. And then TikTok's just so easy to create content with. Like, it's just talking to your phone. It's not like, I feel like Instagram era was like the pretty and like aesthetic yeah. era. And then TikTok came along and was just like reality's like preferred there too.
Lowered the boundary, right?
Yeah. So it was just like a great mix of like real finances, but also like real content and how it was shot. Like, I had 5 minutes to just chat in my kitchen quickly before like I got my daughter from nursery so I can make a TikTok and then...
Brilliant. You know, just... So what was that video that popped off that people were like, that's the one, and you were like, okay, I'm onto something yeah. here. I'm actually going to carry on doing it.
I think I just said how I felt about money, where I was like, I've worked really hard to get onto like what would be classed as like a good salary up north, like for my age and stuff. But I feel like I don't have any money. Like, I still feel skint. And I basically just said, I'm sick of feeling skint all the time. And that picked up a bit. And then I started to talk about the debt that I had been in and how I paid it off. And the fact that I was starting pretty much from scratch with, like, no savings. And then it just picked from there.
Yeah. I mean, I can see why that video took off, because everyone watching that was probably, like, nodding along, like, being
yeah,
like,
I know.
Yeah, I'm earning money as well, but why do I feel broke all yeah. the time? So it's just that relatability factor, right?
Totally.
So now you make videos about, obviously, you said your debt story, the way you feel about money, mm-hmm. your general budgeting, income, how much you spend on things. What are kind of the ones that get picked up by most people that they're like, that's the video that I love?
I think a lot of payday routines and like personal budgeting, again, because I will literally just say like all of the outgoings that we have and see if it changes. People are also really interested in like our food shops too. Like, it's, I think it's just generally what is like a pinch point for a lot of people. Like, we used yeah. to overspend on food all the time and then we brought that back down. So yeah, anything around payday, what our outgoings are, tend to get picked up.
People
well.
Love that.
Yeah.
And how have you personally been when it comes to literally like personal finance? So you were in £8,000 credit card debt?
Yes.
How did you get, do you know even know how you got into that in the first place?
Oh,
like, are you aware?
Yeah, I think funny enough, it happened when I actually had an increase in my income, which I did not think would be the case. I just thought, okay, like, you feel like you're struggling a bit and you're like a lower income. You work so hard at your career, get like really good job, climb in your career, and then you have more disposable income, so you elevate your lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it feels great. But then I got to a point where I got onto like the best salary I'd been on at the time. I was like 26 or 25. And then I just didn't realize that if I then got a car on finance, if I then chose to go on holiday here, then actually my disposable income was being taken away on those things. So I couldn't also then live an elevated, like going out and about on weekends and
yeah,
stuff.
No, of course.
I was just overspending per month, basically.
Does that make sense to you now? Because I feel like this is like the biggest like mistake that people make with mm-hmm. the money. They think that more income generally will put them in a better situation.
Yeah.
But what actually tends to happen is that they end up being worse off because,
totally.
Like I said, they become less frugal, they're
yeah.
less counting the pennies, and things kind of get out of control. So let's say they get a 5% raise, but their lifestyle increases by 10%.
Yeah, because, yeah, I used to basically just operate off of how I felt. So, like, I would feel great. I had a salary increase, and then I would spend in that
time
way.
For a holiday.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's... It's sad because it is normal in the sense as well of wanting to like treat yourself. And I think it was finding a way to do that while being within my means and learning what within my means means. So for me now, I only actually think about my disposable income. not my actual overall salary. Because what the shocker was that I actually, in that having that salary increase, I was in full-time employment then, not part-time. So the childcare bill was so staggering. So I should have thought of my disposable income and like known my numbers.
Yeah.
I didn't know my numbers and I just had this feeling of like I would have more money, basically.
That's such an important thing. People think that they just kind of know, they should just know what's going on. But actually looking at, I mean, that's the, I say it this way. Everyone knows what they earn. Like everyone knows that number that's landing in their bank account at the end of every month. If I asked 90% of people what's leaving, they'll just look at me with a blank face. They'll be like, couldn't tell you. And if I try and be even more specific, like how much are you spending on, I don't know, energy last month? Couldn't tell you. How much are you spending on your like takeaways last month? Couldn't tell you. And I'm like, but you know exactly what's going in. They're like, oh yeah, I'm earning, you know, £2,460.07. I'm like, that is like
the craziest
disparity in knowledge. So you got into that level of debt via that method and then something clicked for you, I'm assuming. Yeah. It just went like, this isn't good. I need to change something.
Mm-hmm.
What was that moment like? Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, I was... Well, I have a daughter, and so she was around, like, one at the time. And I remember just thinking, like, I don't want to feel like I'm in this, like, stressed about money mindset. And it's so interesting because, like, I think people might assume, like, oh, you have a child and then you just want the numbers to be good, like, stability, savings in place. But I became so aware of, like, my behaviour and think, like, you know how people say, like, you know, the relationships you have will impact then the relationships that your children have. But that's also the case probably with money and stuff.
Like, the case.
I grew up around a lot of, like, stress and anxiety about money. Like, people around me, like, feared it quite a lot. And I remember just realising, like, I feel crap about it. If I keep this going and keep, like, that feeling happening, then chances are that will, like, end up being the case. Yeah, and I was just like, no, I want her to, I don't want to spoil her. I think all parents probably walk that fine line of being like, I don't want to spoil my child, but I don't want them to have like, the weight of it on their shoulders. Like, it's, you can think you're hiding stuff from your kids, but it's palpable. You know, if you're stressed, they'll pick it up and stuff.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want it.
I mean, they say your financial attitude is set by 7 years old. So there's a literal sign for you. Like, that's according to research. Everyone thinks it's maybe when you're 18 or 19 or 20. You literally pick it up from your parents. Yeah. It's just the mood in the house, the way they talk about it. You know, so if you're going out for a meal, you'll be sitting there and you'll realise, like, your parents are probably paying the bill.
Yeah.
What's the, like, the feeling and the vibe around those environments. So you kind of got to that point. How did you... £8,000 is a lot of debt to get out
of.
That must have been a real switch in just the way that you handled your income.
Yeah, I know. It was like such a like
spending,
night and day.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I basically gave myself a plan. And what I found really interesting was the plan said it would take like over a year, like a year and a half to pay off when I worked out the monthly payments and stuff. But once I had the plan, I actually felt calm. Because I was like, no, you're going to do it and you'll see it happen. And every month was happening and I was paying off that amount. And then the debt amount was going down and I would just put it all in a little. I became like such a spreadsheet person. And I found it really satisfying to do. And then I just had this sense of like, it flipped instantly from feeling stressed. And like, I had this weird moment where I kind of was like, I'm either just going to, the route will either be that I pay it off or that I accept and become comfortable with being in debt, and that becomes the reality, is that I just get comfortable with the fact that I'm just going to be in credit card debt, and I didn't want that to be the case. So I think that was like the flip for me.
Yeah, I can tell, like I can see it the way you're talking. Like the moment you made that decision, there was never any kind of choice there.
No.
You knew straight away that debt was going to go. It didn't matter how long it took. And I think that one thing that you mentioned there, which is so important, was this idea that it wasn't like you tried to pay off your debt in a month or 2 months. You said it was over a year.
Mm-hmm.
It was a plan that was a really long-term plan.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, okay, you were still in debt for a whole nother year,
mm-hmm.
but you were calm and there was a plan and that number was going down. And I always say that as long as your debt is going in the downwards direction, mm-hmm. not the upwards direction, you're heading in the right direction.
Exactly. So true. So, and you learn so much across that entire time. I'm almost glad it took that long, if that makes sense, because the amount that you learn about yourself with money across a year and a half is like huge.
Was that the period that you were teaching yourself more about personal finance, understanding budgeting, like breakdowns?
Everything. I was like, okay, when does my spending just go? When do I feel motivated and when do I feel like deflated and when do I feel like this? It was so down to feelings with money. Like,
that, yeah, I mean, you could potentially argue that if you hadn't have been in debt, now I'm not telling people to get but you hadn't, there would never have been a time in your life where you would have had to have this reset, where you would have had to start teaching yourself, becoming more mindful about the way that you spend, you know, becoming more aware of the different tools that exist. Things like 50, 30, 20. You're just saying that like as if it's like a normal thing to know. But 95% of people, 50, 30, 20 means nothing to them.
Exactly.
It's generally not a number that even exists. And that's clearly something that you've self-taught.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now a few years down the line.
Mm-hmm.
You're not in debt anymore.
No, thank gosh.
Two thumbs up. And you're also creating incredible content and probably inspiring a lot of people when it comes to just, you know, their money. I know I'm one of them. I watch that and I love it. What's kind of your goal now with money? Like, what's the aspirations?
So I'm very honest about it. So I basically have said from like the off, like, I wanted to try starting creating content and see if it could work for me and stuff. I actually used to work in content in my day job. So I was like a content marketing manager for like a big company and stuff. So I was like, okay, I'm going to use my skill set here and see if I can give this like be a content creator thing a go if it's not too late and all of that stuff. And as soon as I started to earn any money from it, I said and I disclosed, because I think it was important for me at the time, particularly when with me being so honest about my personal finances, that if I made any money from that, that I was honest about it, just so it felt right.
Bit of a moral conundrum.
Yeah, it just had to feel right. And I think people take for granted what people could actually like understand as well. It's like I have my personal finances from my day job, and now I have this new setup, which is a limited company. And any content creation money goes in there.
Yes.
And I'm going to let you know exactly what happens with that every month as well. So there's almost like two sides. And everyone gets it. They totally understand. And I think there's that like transparency with like content creation as a business too, and like how it works. And then just being super real with the numbers there. So for me, I'm earning into that, and hopefully it keeps going per month. And I'd love to purchase my mom a property with that money, which I said it, and then I think I would then realise how complex it is to purchase a property, particularly for a family member with a limited company.
Yeah.
But I've started to contact like mortgage brokers, all of that stuff, and I have like one lender that I could. So you can purchase properties like as a buy to let with a limited company, but it's hard to rent out to family. I don't, you know, I'm entering a whole world I did not
speak to the experts,
did
right?
not know. Yeah. Like, if you think personally, I've just come from a point of understanding my monthly budget, and then suddenly I'm propelled 6 months later into a world
you're becoming
of
a mortgage broker,
having a limited company with like wanting to purchase. So it's a huge steep learning curve. But again, I wanted to be super like transparent that that's what I'm thinking. So yeah, that's the aim, to purchase my mom a property with that.
What an incredible goal. And I'll ask you one last question, which is a really quick one. And it's, what's one tip that you would want to share with someone listening when it comes to money?
Oh, for me, what I've had to really realize is that like, and it sounds so cheesy, right? But I've had to properly learn that I'm actually worth having like stability when it comes to money. I don't think you're outright told that by anyone, do you know what I mean? And it was like, for me, paying off that debt, I was doing it for me, not for anything else, to like not feel stressed. And I think same with building emergency savings for myself, you know, like to get 3 months worth of emergency savings, it's like you're worth having savings, like you're actually worth having like no stress when it comes to your money. And I think like anyone should know that. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's like, everyone is worth it. So.
That's honestly such a unique lesson. I don't think we've had that, but you are worth it, and you like are
yeah,
worth doing
so
it for
cheesy,
yourself.
But like, it kept me going, because I was like, no, I'm so worth having a savings in the bank. Like,
I can promise you that someone listening, that will work for them and that will inspire them. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh,
really valuable. Hope you enjoyed.
Yes, loved it. First podcast.
And if they do want to check you out, they can just find yours, Beth M. Fuller.
Yes.
On
TikTok and Instagram.
TikTok and Instagram. Go check her out. Some cool stuff. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
All right, that brings us to the end of that little interview. I hope you enjoyed. I like to do Money Tip of the Week now, which is a little section where I just give you one sprinkle of knowledge on top of Beth's piece of knowledge, which is you are worth saving for. You are worth not having stress when it comes to money. And I think that's a really nice tip from her. I'm not going to try and beat it. I'm just going to try and add another one on top. And this one actually stems back to the news stories that I was telling you earlier. We were talking about student loans. And I think this one's really vital. I want you to just go online and type into Google, check student loan balance, figure out your login details. Go in there and actually look at how much debt you are in when it comes to a student loan, if you are someone that has one. I think that 95% of people just probably ignore it and just get on with life. Be aware of that money. Be aware of that number. Be aware of your debt. It might inspire you and push you a little bit harder to get better with your personal finances. So that's it. Just log in and have a look. Cool. So coming up after a little break, I have Laura Ann Moore in the studio, a money mindset coach and the founder of Mind Money Soul. I'd stick around if I were you.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
FUBAR Radio presents
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Joining me in the studio was AJ and Curtis Pritchard.
When I used to go on Strictly, I used to think of it as like a public service. I'm entertaining somebody for 90
seconds.
And
we salute you.
And
thank
just like,
you, AJ.
I want people to forget about their problems. I know it's a really weird mentality.
No, it's a... You are right in a way, right? Because there
but
are
never
people
never made
that
the final.
There was no need for that. Well,
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
I'm joined by fellow Love Island contestant Adam Maxted and professional wrestler, may I add. If you could wrestle any celebrity, who would it be?
I'm trying to think who would be...
Someone needs to be like your height, your size. Come on, you've got to be fair about it. It can't be like a little weasel.
Maybe like... Anthony Joshua or something.
Jesus, really? You reckon you could take Anthony Joshua?
In a boxing fight, probably not.
But in a wrestling match. Yeah.
In a wrestling match, I back myself.
Okay, fair.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
TikTok sensations Jack and Sorrel. Iconically, there have been some amazing celeb couples. Who would be your favourite of all times, David Beckham and Victoria? Goals.
I just think, like, the twists and turns of it all, but still being together like that, that to me is peak celeb.
For me, do you know what? I just love a good power couple. We had Beyonce, Jay-Z. Like,
yes.
I want them to reign highly. I want them to be girl bossing, man bossing, just bossing throughout, and us obsessed with them separately and together.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. Again, I always like to catch you up. This is That Money Show on FUBAR Radio. I am That Money Guy. You might have just heard my interview with Beth. If you haven't, don't worry, because we've got another incredible guest in the studio, sat across from me, Laura Ann Moore. How are you doing?
I'm amazing.
You're amazing.
I'm amazing. I'm happy to be here.
Ask you, how are you doing? Not like, are you amazing? I am amazing.
I am amazing.
Well, I did introduce you before as a money mindset coach.
Yes.
So you starting by saying you are amazing is very clearly evident of what you do. Positive vibes.
Exactly.
All the way. I hope I haven't confused anyone. I mean, do most people know what a money mindset coach is? Probably not.
I would say probably not.
Should we lead in with that?
Yeah.
Do you want to like introduce yourself? Explain a little bit who you are, what you do.
All the things.
By the way, we know each other from previously. We don't just act weird from the off within a show.
We're friends.
Yeah.
Well. I would say people don't really know what it is because people don't maybe necessarily understand the concept of like money mindset. But I call myself like money mindset coach, financial well-being speaker, financial coach, all of the titles.
Bit of everything.
But essentially, your money mindset is like your relationship to money. And then coaching, the difference between like coaching and advising is advising, you're literally telling people what they can do with their money, financial products, that kind of thing. Whereas coaching is more focused on like guiding and empowering people to kind of like make their own decisions and have confidence in what they do with their money. So a lot of what I do is around helping people feel confident in their relationship with money.
Well, very succinctly put. Much Thank better. You. I would have just rambled on. If I was a money mindset coach, you would have been sat there for 15 minutes whilst I explained what I did. No, that's really, really cool. And I feel like it's quite a unique thing. Often when people talk to me about money and they're like, oh, it's just purely mathematical, it's like an equation thing, I tell people that some people would argue that it's like 50-50, money versus like mindset or money versus emotion and all that kind of stuff. I'd probably say it's probably more emotion than it is maths.
My man.
Exactly. It's probably like 80-20, isn't it? The way that you can interact, the way that you can manage your behavior, all that kind of stuff. So money mindset coach, don't write it off, because if you can get that aspect of your financials right, the maths part is really simple.
Yeah.
Like really, really simple.
Yeah.
So money mindset coach, take me back. Why? Like, how did we get into this?
How did we get into this? So years ago, when I was like 11, I wanted to be an actress.
Got it.
That was the plan.
Can see the link.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The performance. Wanted to be an actress. Drama school was like £15,000 per year. Now you can get like a student loan. But at the time, I couldn't. So by the time I got to like 19, I was like, I'm not going to uni. I'm going to go to drama school. But I need to find the money myself because my parents can't afford to put me through it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let's get a job. Let's save the money. And then by age 22, I had 15 grand. Which was amazing, but very last minute, I had the opportunity to go traveling instead. Like literally 2 weeks before I started my acting course.
£15,000 in the bank.
Saved in the bank, in cashola.
For 10, 11 years, you have been planning to use said money for drama school. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks before someone goes, do you want to go traveling?
Yeah, and I'm like, this is a great opportunity. And it plagued me. I was like awake for like 2 weeks. Like, what do I do? But I did decide to go traveling. It just felt like a once in a lifetime opportunity to like go to Australia with two of your best mates. And I was like, I can defer my place. Obviously, I didn't think about spending the money, but that was a whole other argument. And I'm a big believer that everything happens for a reason. So went traveling for like 7 or 8 months, did some of the most amazing stuff like Bali, Cambodia, Thailand, spent every single penny.
Got it.
But when I came back, I had this moment where I was like, I didn't have to choose which one I wanted based on which one I could afford. It was just, which one did I want? And like, that was so empowering. And it felt like the first time I ever had like a positive experience from money. And I was like, I kind of want everyone to experience this. So I just started talking about it online, Instagram, had a blog, you know, all of that. And then as I was doing it more, I realized just how much I spoke about the emotional side. I've always been interested in like psychology and like self-help books. I've read it. I've done that kind of stuff for years. And the two just naturally came together. And then I got certified as natural financial coach in like 2021.
This was how many years after you got back from traveling?
So I came back from traveling in like 2017, started my blog in 2019. I just moved to London as well. So I was like, I can't.
Expensive.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah.
And then, yeah, it kind of took off. Obviously, the power of social media, I was then able to share the message far and wide. And this was back when people weren't talking about it as much. It's amazing how many people are like openly talking about it now. But I think it was such a like taboo.
Still is.
Yeah.
We are still the minority.
Yeah.
By far. The people that talk about money still on the niche. Internet. We're still weird. We're still trying to change the way that everyone thinks about it. And we will keep pushing on as many people hate us as possible. The more the better, actually.
Yeah.
it burns our fire brighter. So that's really cool that your like kind of entire financial education came from working really hard, saving up a lot of money for something. Like you had a goal. This wasn't like done with like any financial plan. No. I mean, it was, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
Spent said money, came back, and you were like, time to teach like that. It's more of a feeling,
yeah,
like you
it
said.
It was more of a feeling. I just went with the vibe, basically. And then everyone's like, how did you figure out your career? I'm like, I fell into it.
I love it.
Like,
personal finance expert from a vibe. Martin Lewis, similar story. Yeah. if you're listening.
He loves it.
Yeah. He'll come on in a few weeks and also say the vibe that he felt.
Yeah.
And that got him into it.
Vibes.
So that kind of catapulted you into the world of personal finance. You said you did a bit of coaching, and that like we're quite a few years down the line now, 2024. Who is Laura Ann Moore and what does she do on a daily?
Oh, what a big question. So coaching,
wakes
up, yeah, wakes up, goes to yoga, has a matcha. You know me so well. So coaching is still a big part of it, like one-to-one coaching, but I do a lot of like financial well-being workshops, panels, talks. I do a lot of content, obviously.
Yes.
Content is king. So they're the kind of like key things I do. And I also have an investing course where I teach people like the basics of the stock market. Real beginner stuff, like people who literally don't know anything about it to wanting to be able to invest. But my whole thing is about like helping people to feel good about money and helping people to actually build wealth confidently, but doing it in a way that works for them. I think that there are so many like, this is the one size that fits all. And probably the biggest question that I get asked from the community is like, what should I be doing?
Mm.
And I'm like, there is no should. There are certain things you can mix into your financial plan, but you know, one person's financial plan is going to look so different from someone else's. So it's like really helping people personalize their financial experience.
I feel like I want to do like a mini coaching session live on air, but you're nodding at me.
Yeah, I love
like,
that.
Like for like two, 3 minutes. So like what would someone, so I've come in, yeah. Should I play a role or should I just play me?
Yeah, let's role play. Maybe you. Yeah. It's up to you. It depends if you want to share your problems.
We'll find out. So I kind of sit down in front of you. I realize I'm convinced that I want a mindset coach or a money mindset coach, but I'm not quite sure why. I sit down and I go like, money's shit right now. I hate everything about it. It stresses me out. Where do we start? Like, how do you even get someone out of that groove?
So the key thing, and you mentioned this like before when you were talking to Beth, is like your relationship with money, your attitude towards money is set really young. So I always like to first off kind of look at like what happened to you when you were younger.
Stephen Barlett-esque.
Absolutely.
Take me back to your childhood.
Yeah, take me back to your childhood. Tears, I'm going to make you cry. But like really understanding like what are your earliest memories of money? Who influenced you the most out of your parents? And a lot of the time, the phrases that we say and the phrases that we use about money, there is a link. And it's not always necessarily going to be when you're 5. It might be something that happened to you when you were 20. It might be like something that happened when you were older. But like if we can kind of start to understand where does that come from and helping people to understand, okay, well, that's not objective. Like you saying money is shit, I hate it. It's like, okay, well, let's figure out why. And let's figure out if we can see an alternative reality for you. Because right now, that phrasing and that wording isn't helping you.
Yeah.
It might feel like it is because our brains are geared up to keep us safe. Our brains don't want to keep us happy, which is so annoying. But if safety is first, it's like finding that place of safety in itself.
Got it.
So in that instance, I would be like, we'd be looking at your childhood, we'd be understanding like what might have happened to make you feel this way. And then how can we view it differently? And then how can we start to take little actions that start to actually change and like reprogram your subconscious? Because a lot of the time, people just think it's like positive thinking. Whilst there's so much power in that, there's also the element of needing to take action. But that's, you've got to start somewhere.
Got it. And I know that like you probably coach someone for quite a long time. You can't just do it in like 2 minutes. Yeah. This is probably taking months, like sometimes probably years even to fix someone. But what are some of the tips that are like the biggest switches you see in some of your clients that when you say like start thinking about this or start doing this, you start to see really positive reactions?
So awareness is like probably the biggest thing. So a lot of the time we're all on autopilot. A lot of the decisions that we make with our money, it's just like, it's habitual or it's emotional. Like money is so emotional. Mm. We make all of our decisions from a place of emotion first and then we justify it with logic. So the awareness piece around like, why do I behave like that? So if you overspend, what is it that's triggering you to overspend? Maybe like you spend every time you get lonely or bored, or, you know, if you, for example, have ADHD, you might struggle with dopamine. So it might be that. Maybe you are someone who is like, treat yourself, and then you're always spending when you're happy. So it's like, what are my triggers? Like, what is it that's causing me to react in a certain way? And like the awareness piece is probably where people have the biggest light bulb moments, because then off the back of that, you springboard into, well, what action do I need to take? Because without the awareness, like without having that data, you don't really know what to do. So yeah, I would say like, and this is for people, obviously, if you want to work with a coach, please come reach out. But if not, you can do it through journaling, like asking yourself those questions. How do I feel about spending? How do I feel about saving? What's my belief around this? And when you then have that understanding, then you can make changes and decisions around what you want to do next.
So basically, you need a lot of data points.
We need data. I love data.
You need to track actually what's going on, because enough of this autopilot. When you go and buy something, all right, that's been bought now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can go and return it. Please, please do if it was a waste of money. But let's say it's been bought. The key is, why did you buy it?
Yeah.
Like, what was going on there? Did you actually need it?
Yeah.
Like, do you regret it?
Yeah.
Like, did that decision have to be made? And if you do that and extrapolate that over a few months, you start to really understand the psychology and therefore you can change it.
Yeah.
Am I getting somewhere?
Yeah. And that's like the patterns of your spending, right? So you can understand, whenever I've had a hard day at work, I always go and get a takeaway even though I've got food in the fridge, right? There's nothing wrong with takeaways, but there is if it's not in your budget and it's putting you in a bad financial position. Mm-hmm. That's the spending part. But you might have, like my belief when I was younger, dad was always out at work, family never had any money. I was like, money's really hard to make. Money's hard to make and it's hard to hold on to. So then when I was 16 and I got my first ever job, I became a total hoarder because I was like, money's hard to make. So it might not be spending that's an issue. It might be your fear around going self-employed. Mm-hmm. It might be your fear around, like, maybe you have a bit more of a lack mindset and you feel like there's not enough available for you. So it's like, first of all, identifying what is my issue. A lot of the time, most of the people that come to me is a spending problem.
Yeah.
But there are so many other factors that, you know, kind of involved in that. So it's like, what's the sticking point for me? And then what's the patterns and the data around that? And then we can put steps in place.
Are we looking to strip emotion away from finances? Are we looking to just get rid of it so we can be robots and do everything perfectly?
No, it's less about stripping the emotion away and more about acknowledging that emotion is involved, and like we can't control our emotions. What we can control is how we react to that. Like if we get sad, humans don't want to feel bad emotions. In society, we've been told that like pain, heartbreak, stress, loneliness, like they're bad. But actually, if we just sit with emotion, a lot of the time it passes through us in like 90 seconds, but we haven't been taught that. So what do? We go out and we're like, let's try and spend, or let's try and, you know, we try and change how we feel. So instead, it's less about getting rid of the emotion and more about being aware that it's going to be there, figuring out what your triggers are, and more changing the emotion that you have towards money. So making it more positive, basically. Like if you have all these negative feelings towards money, you can shift it to be more positive.
I think that's a really nice one, because often people say to me, like, if I just cut the emotions out, will I be good? And I'm like, well, I think that part of the reason why, like, I've managed to create a really healthy habit with money myself personally, I mean, I speak about personal finance on the internet, I hope that I've kind of got it under control. But it's the fact that, like, I have positive emotions associated with it. So, like, I know when I can reward myself, and I have that even more excitement, because I've basically, I can build things up a little bit more. I don't just splurge and give in to my emotions every single time. The control of the emotions, boom, left hook, is the reason that I suppose, like, maybe I'm doing things better than I used to.
Yeah. Yeah, and what I also think, like, it's like this lifelong journey. You learn different things at different points. And when people have, like, these moments of awareness, they're more like, oh, so, okay, if I change that one bit, like, it has a bit of a knock-on effect. But like you say, being more positive about it and giving yourself the space and the grace that sometimes you're going to make mistakes. That's okay. I think a lot of the time we end up trying to shame ourselves into better habits. And, like, there's so much connection as well between, like, money and fitness and, like, health. You're going to be in a worse position. Like, let's say you're like, oh, I'm feeling like a little fatty and I need to stop eating biscuits and I need to go to the gym and run it off. That is not long lasting motivation versus I love my body. I want to be able to feel good in my older years. Like, okay, you know, it's more of just a different relationship with it. You want to do that with your money and see money. Like, when I start to see money as a tool, like, money is a tool that allows me to have a good life, that allows me to be more generous with my friends, to buy from independently owned businesses, that you see the positive impact that having more money and being good with your money has, that knock-on effect can start help you start to, I guess, feel better about it and have a better relationship with it. It's gonna be more likely that you'll want to spend less, or you'll want to save more, or you'll just be more mindful with it.
Beautiful. You mentioned just a little bit earlier, if I go rewind a little second, the word failures.
Yeah.
I think it's such an important one when it comes to money, because everyone, like, when they see me on the internet, they probably think everything's going great. I mean, at the beginning of the show, I announced that I was in £44,500 worth of student loan debt. Two thumbs up. But it's really important for people to know the failures. Yeah. Not that that's a failure per se, but it's a not, like, the...
Yeah.
I would rather not be in that than be in that.
If I had a choice.
I'd love to, like, no, it doesn't have to be the world's biggest failure, but just something that's gone wrong that you can acknowledge and share publicly, so people know that also, like, you're a mindset coach, but there's still things that you're working on.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've had periods, like when I saved that £15,000 when I was 19, I also at 25 then saved another 25 grand. So over the course of my younger years, I've saved about £40,000. Some of that is now invested. But there have been points where I haven't stuck with my own rules around, like, the emotional spending, learning how to stick to a budget, and undone some of my financial progress. And, you know, I definitely was like, oh my God, how can I, you know, I can't be in this position. Like, I'm the one. And then I'm like, oh, I'm only human. Like, okay, what can I learn from this? But yeah, there have definitely been points where I haven't stuck to my own budget and I've, like, dipped into savings, undone some financial progress. But I think my relationship with money, and I guess it's also partly down to being a business owner, is you feel like you've got a bit more of an uncapped income ceiling. But I'm like, I trust that there's, like, an abundance of money and resources, and that at different points in my life, there's going to be a different balance of saving, spending. Like, financial progress doesn't always have a linear trajectory. And I think I had to kind of go through it to go, oh, okay, I'm not, just because I teach this and I teach other people, like, therapists still need therapists, do you know what I mean?
Doctors still need doctors.
Doctors still need doctors.
Hairdressers still need hairdressers.
Lovely. Any more? Money coaches still need money coaches.
I literally was sat there, by the way, in my hairdresser the other day being like, who cuts your hair?
Hairdressers cut their own hair.
Some. Yeah. Not a lot.
Not a lot.
One last question to ask you before you do leave is one tip. I always like to ask, you know, us finance experts, apparently, quotation marks, One tip that you wish someone could hear right now about money.
About money. I'm going to make it a combined emotional and practical one.
Even better, because that's relevant to you.
You know how I do. So I would say when it comes to financial goals, especially like saving, investing, make sure that your goals are your own. It's so easy, especially in the UK, to fall into a situation where we're saving or investing towards things, but it's someone else's goal. For example, saving for a property. If you really want a property and it makes emotional and financial sense, go for it. But when it comes to saving, for us to stay motivated, we need to have an emotional connection to it. If when you know that your goals are your own, pay yourself first. Always put that money aside for your future self. And it's going to be so much easier to actually grow that money because it feels like you're excited by what you're working towards.
I love that. What a way to end it. Laura, thank you so much. The Money Mindset Coach. How can people find you online?
Instagram, TikTok, and my podcast.
Full name, Laura Ann Moore.
Laura Ann Moore.
On voila.
Everything.
On everything.
On all of it. And if you're corporate, LinkedIn.
Laura, cheers. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, wicked. Well, that was Laura. As you can tell, we might know each other a little bit too well. Ooh, I'm going to go back on live for a second. Oh, hey, guys, for who are watching on the live stream right now. So I hope I left you, well, I hope she left you with quite a lot of emotional and financial knowledge. I'm sure that she did. We are with you for just another few minutes. But there's a lot of information that you can still get from the rest of the show, so do stick around. Number one is I like to share scam of the week. This is not where we scam you. This is where we inform you of scams that are going on so you can avoid said scams. Apparently there's a Harry Kane like crypto coin scandal. If you get offered said Harry Kane coin, please avoid. If you get promised returns of any percentage, unless it's by an official bank, please do not accept it. These are scams that are taking advantage of the fact that England are in the semis and they're going to bring it home. That's a prediction, by the way, actually. Not as confident as I am about 4 seconds ago when I said that out loud, really loudly. Please do not hold me to that. This time next week, we'll actually know the answer as to whether or not that was true. You might have an entire England-themed hour with me next week when we just talk about the finances of the England team. Anyway, Harry Kane coin, where was I? Scam. Don't buy it. It's a scam. We have a few questions that came in. A reminder that you can DM us on Instagram at That Money Show, and we will answer your questions live on air. Let's go straight in with Gerald. Thank you, Gerald, for asking. You are 30 years old. Should you invest in a financial advisor? Gerald, I don't think the age is super... Well, the older you get, the more you might need a financial advisor because the particulars become a bit more particular and you'll probably have a larger amount of wealth. At the age of 30, again, think about the size of your wealth. Think about, is this things that you can manage yourself? A lot of financial advisors won't really accept clients below quite a high amount of net worth. So that's something just to be aware of, full stop. But secondly, I do often say this, but get the simple things right first. If you have covered everything and you have some complex situation that you think a financial advisor can actually help you with specifically, then yes, perhaps a financial advisor is good. Ideally, if you can pay them by the hour, then rather than letting them take a percentage of your profit, that's something that I would really look into because ultimately percentages add up to a lot of money. Per hour, you're actually getting the value per hour that they're putting into your money and time. But yeah, I would say, if you haven't kind of ticked off and covered all the basics first, maybe get that done before you even consider a financial advisor because ultimately you're paying someone to do something that you could do yourself. And the last question from Romaine is, what are your thoughts on overpaying on your mortgage? Should you do it? Well, way to open a can of worms before the end of the show. Overpaying on a mortgage, there are a lot of things that your money can do prior to overpaying on a mortgage that are more ideal. For example, could you pay into your pension and get a match scheme from your company? Probably better in terms of if we're looking at absolute maths. Could you pay off all and any high interest debts first? Could you be building an emergency fund? Could you start investing into a long-term investment? Could you actually get higher returns on your money? Once you've kind of ticked off the bucket, I would recommend you to do a quick Google or a YouTube video titled, "This is the best order of what to do with your money." Give that one a quick watch. Once you've ticked off the main key things, there are optional things you can do like a general investment or paying off your mortgage. So yes, this is something that I would rather you did than just threw cash at a wall or didn't do anything with it full stop. But if you haven't done the other things like paying off high interest debt, pension, investing, building an emergency fund, etc., I would recommend taking a look into those things first. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. So, brilliant show. I promise you, you'll be better with your money by the end of the hour. And I can guarantee that if you have listened to the entire thing, even if you listen to just 5 minutes, you are better with your money, because I am better with my money and I'm meant to be some kind of personal finance expert, apparently. Anyway, if you do like the show, you can listen back to it on any podcasting platform. You can also download the FUBAR Radio app and listen to us live. You can find us on social media at That Money Show. Thank you to all of our guests that join us today. I have been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. We are here to make you 1% better with your money every single week. And we'll see you next week, hopefully, when England have brought it home.